Ah, he's my guest today. And this is Katie Walker. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Lakshmi. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And how are you?
Very good. Yes. Happy Monday.
Oh, dear. Happy Monday. Yes, it is. It is. It's a nice weather.
Yeah, it's improving, I think. Hopefully.
I liked it, yes.
Yeah, nice crisp autumn.
So tell me, you work in Akidoa and you're give us a little spiel on what you do in Akidoa.
The spiel. Yes, I work for Akidoa. We are a national network of migrant women. We advocate on behalf of migrant women in Ireland at policy levels. We provide community services to women on integration, equality, and health as well. We have we work on health and gender-based violence. And I'm the policy and research officer. And so I'm overseeing a few projects across our areas of work, including mental health, on racism and integration, on direct provision, on female genital mutilation. Basically we just are seeking for equality of migrant women in Ireland.
Now, I was. Did you see the new report on racism in Ireland?
Yes. We've seen many reports
through this report, latest one. I saw it in the Irish Times about there are good points and bad points, and there's high incidence of reporting on racism.
Certainly, I mean, Ireland has a lot going for it.
Yes.
I think. For the most part, we can be a very welcoming country.
Yes.
We are a diverse country, but there's a lot of improvements to be made. And I think there's, in some parts of society, tolerance is lacking. And a lot of that is due to education and, getting people in the same room to talk. I think misinformation is the biggest... misinformation and ignorance is the biggest tool for intolerance, really.
But actually, there are good points in this compared to other European countries. Ireland has the equality. People are really good and they are doing their very best in that area.
Yes.
And also the Gardaí, that they would go, they actually had 70% of people said that they would go to a guard.
Trust in the guards.
Yes.
I don't think that should be underestimated. I know that, our organization and our women, we do community events that include the Gardaí, and we have good relations with them. I think, keeping them on side is absolutely important, certainly. Especially, like you said, when you see in other European countries that things might be sliding or might be turning, less welcoming for different people in society, then it's good for Ireland to hold on to that reputation and to just really try to do the best that we can for everybody in the country.
I think it's it depends on how you read these things. So if the law enforcement and the equality, the policies of the government or the policies of the state is working, that would help a lot.
Yes.
Racism, and human beings have their own ways of being, let's say. So I suppose what is important is the strength of policies.
Yes. Policy, certainly. I know that from our perspective, we do try to advocate for policy change at local level, at national level. We have connections with the EU as well. And so at all levels, we want the voice of migrant women and their interests to be considered.
Yes.
So, when you're cooking up your policies, consider how it will affect the women in society. Consider how it will affect migrant women, people of colour, people with disabilities. Just make sure that, it's as inclusive as possible, because policies that only meet the needs of the majority, they're not good policies.
Could you tell our listeners what does Akidoa stand for? Actually, when I was saying that you were coming to, they were saying, what's Akidoa? So tell us what is Akidoa.
In the name? So Akidoa is short for Akina Dada Wa Africa, which means Sisterhood of Africa. And it began nearly 20 years ago as African women in Ireland who got together informally and met regularly to discuss what life was like here, how they were settling in, what were their experiences, what was good, what was bad, what could they do as a community to improve things for themselves. And eventually they saw the need to formalize, and it eventually became what we are today, like a national network of migrant women. That's all inclusive. It's not just Africa. It's women from Europe, women from Asia, from Africa, from South America, anyone who comes to this country and finds that as a migrant, as a woman, are my needs being met.
So it's about sisterhood more.
It is about sisterhood, absolutely. Yeah, you can definitely see that at any of our events.
Yes, it's about sisterhood. Now, tell us, you were doing some research. Research is very important.
Very important.
Because it tells you, really, you know, it's not hearsay. It's something that can be proven, I think. So what do women say? What's their research about?
Well, like you say, evidence is important. It's one thing taking things anecdotally, like I have an idea in my head, but if you can actually get some research behind it and get some proof, then it's stronger longer term if you want to advocate for change.
I think it would help racism so that people know real facts.
Exactly.
If they want to hear it. And if they want to listen, right? So I think it's a really good thing, research. It's not only for, academics to do research.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think, like in the charity sector, you see a lot of campaigns. And I think the strongest campaigns have a combination of like statistics and evidence to show, okay, here's factually, scientifically what's going on. But then also the real stories and, the narratives of the people who are affected. And you see the strongest campaigns have that. And I think that's what we're trying to focus on at the moment, in particular in our mental health research project. We try to capture the experiences of migrant women, not just migrant women, but women refugees who've been resettled here in Ireland, who originally came from Syria, and then also women seeking international protection who are living in our accommodation centres. And so we wanted to speak to them directly. We had focus groups and interviews, and just let them tell their stories in their own words as much as possible and see what comes through in that. And then overall, our project will hope to be responsive to what they're telling us, rather than going in with one fixed idea and hoping that they confirm what we're thinking, letting them lead the narrative.
When you speak to the women, right, what did you find out, like in research,
well, we found out that unsurprisingly, being a refugee or seeking asylum, it's quite difficult on the mental health for a lot of reasons. There was a lot of factors, and we tried to draw them out. So for women in direct provision, we know, well, a lot of us in the sector know that the system's not perfect. It's quite broken. So the waiting times, the uncertainty, restrictive living conditions, it creates a lot of tensions for the individual, for the family. And we found that like being a mother in that situation is especially difficult, because not only do you have your own personal stress going on, but you see the stress in your children, you see them change, you worry about their future, but you're not sure how long you'll be living in that situation. And so there's that sort of that double stress. And a lot of the women we spoke to have had, mental ill health directly as a result of this situation they found themselves in. And what we also found was something that came through for me in particular anyway, was just the resilience of the women. You know, they were able to talk for a long time about what's going poorly in their life, but at the end of the day, they said that they still have hope. They hope that things will be better someday. They hope that, you know, their children will have a better lives because of what they're going through. They hope that, you know, they're being the best that they can and they'll come through it. And there's definitely like a strong sense of community there, that they lean on each other to try to get through it.
That's really interesting, because they come from, for instance, people think, you know, when you say a refugee of direct provision, and everything is all right then after that. It is all right for a certain time. Yes, it is a great thing to have shelter. It's very important to have food to eat and shelter and be safe. That's what human beings want. Even if we were in the caves, we want that, right? So I and also to think that these are adult women who have gone through life, and they've come with them. the children. So they are mothers. Their role is not only as a refugee. Mm-hmm. They are women with children, isn't it? So I suppose they are hoping for their children to have shelter, safety, education. Tell us what happens to a woman when a refugee who comes as a direct provision person. What's the beginning? If somebody came in, right? Now, I mean, what happens?
In terms of process?
Yes.
Well, if someone arrives in Ireland and they present themselves perhaps at the airport and say, I would like to seek international protection, then they're taken to the first short-term accommodation centre in Balseskin. And they stay there for a few weeks. They're given their induction. They are told about the process on how to apply for asylum and international protection. And they're accommodated there with their families for the first few weeks until they're relocated to a more permanent accommodation centre somewhere else in the country. So they could be waiting in that second place for a few months until they get a decision, or we've seen many people living there for years and there's no timeline saying, okay, in 20 days time you'll receive your decision, or in 20 months time. It's just, we have to wait, letters will go back and forth with the department, and then eventually, fingers crossed, someday they'll get to resettle in Ireland and have their permanent status. While the women are living here, for the first 9 months, they don't have the right to work. And after that, they can apply. There's a lot of time to fill. There is a heavy reliance, I think, on voluntary organisations with events in the centres. And we do see a lot of our women, we hear time and time again, they want to use that time. They want to be useful. They had careers, they had lives before coming here.
Yes.
Most often we get the question, like, can we volunteer? How can we, you know, be a part of the community? How can we build something here, build a new life? Connecting them with those voluntary opportunities, or even, you know, voluntary work while they don't have the right to do full work. I think that's really important.
It is very important.
The idleness is something that will definitely get to you. And these women know that they want the way out.
These people were never idle. They were very, you know, they would be with the community, and they lost their community. Mm-hmm. Their shelter, everything they've lost. Mm-hmm. And when they come here, they have to start from scratch.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, for instance, when they go for volunteering, mm-hmm. right, I think it's a very good way of orientation mm-hmm. to the culture. Okay. It's really important to learn about the culture, especially I'm a migrant myself. What I found was the weather.
The weather.
I didn't come as a refugee, but mm-hmm. I was an ordinary migrant, mm-hmm. and even, you know, ordinary migrants or whoever mm-hmm. comes here first from warm countries, yes. from cultures that are very warm, very community connected, and, you know, it's very difficult because, you know, people have their own lives, you know, in these countries. Mm-hmm. So, and European countries are very different to African or Asian countries. The cultures are different. You might have known, you might have worked in these countries, have you?
No, I've never lived outside of Europe, really. But absolutely, like you're saying, like, even the smallest things, you kind of underestimate the culture shock. In Europe,
Like, I mean, from Ireland to Italy, going to France, Italy, they are different cultures as well.
Absolutely. Yes. Or like being in a country where you don't know the language.
Yes.
And it's just, okay, so I have to see a doctor. What do I do now?
Yes.
You can rely on friends or family who speak the language. You can hope that the public services have translation in place. And that's the case for some of our services here in Ireland. But, like, it's just very small things that the average person here doesn't think about. But it stacks up and you're kind of against it, whether, you're a migrant here, refugee, asylum seeker. It's there is a lot of orientation, and the more you can get in the community and build connections, that there will be that support there that you can ask, you know, your friend who you met through your kid's school, okay, I have this problem, how can I fix it? And so the women know that, and they do try really hard.
And what kind of voluntary services will accept them to work for?
In Ireland. I guess it depends on their interests and their skills. But I guess it's a mix of things. So there's, you know, the charity sector volunteering. Or, you know, community group volunteering. And then aside from that, it's women who want to rebuild their careers. They're doing like unpaid internships and unpaid work, hoping that even though they might have had 10, 15 years of experience back home, that's not necessarily recognized here. And so they say, OK, I'll do a bit of unpaid or low paid work for a while. I'll build it up. I'll build up my CV. I'll build up my references. And yeah, get my career back on track.
But to be paid, even kind of unpaid pay, you need to have papers, do you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, for any kind of paid work, you'd need permission to work in the States.
Yeah. So that's a problem as well.
That's limiting. Well, if we're still talking about like asylum seekers, then that's a problem. Or if we're talking for some women with dependent status who might have to apply to get permission first or go through the employers, it's a barrier to work, certainly. Yeah.
The women really do have certain skills like sewing. Mm-hmm. I know a lady who kind of teaches sewing, another migrant lady, who teaches the other women. She's got together and is, kind of helping them. And they sit and sew together, which is makes a little community. And they are from all parts of Africa. And I think it's a charity who runs it.
Interesting.
But it's a very interesting thing. Maybe you should do a bit more like that.
Actually, like now that you say it, like that did come through in our focus groups, actually, because our end goal was always sort of like an internal focus, like what do we want to provide to the women. We were hoping for maybe like psychosocial group therapy sessions at the end. But the thing that we heard a lot from our women is they like to do something practical, whether it's sewing or art or creating something.
And cooking.
And cooking as well. Oh, cooking is so important culturally and socially. But they want something that maybe they have something to show at the end of it. They have an end product, but they can learn from other women. And, you know, it's social as well as it gives the opportunity to talk and, like, let the stress out. Pretty much.
And also cooking as a whole new, opens up a new world, because you can cook and eat together and actually cook for the children. That's something they say, that they don't have kitchens when you're in direct provision.
There are a lot of centres around the country that do not have cooking facilities for the individual residents. They're served at fixed meal times from a canteen, and they get their square meals, but they don't get to cook for their own kids. Yes. They don't get to share their own culture with the people they share with their families. A few years ago, there was the McMahon report, which gave recommendations on how to improve this system. And one of the big recommendations was, please make kitchens available to all residents that they can cook for themselves, that they can decide when to eat, they can decide what to eat. And so slowly, I think the accommodation centres are making improvements to make that available, but it's not available across the country. And it's stressful. It's quite sad. I mean, how many of us have like the strongest nostalgia from the taste of our mother's cooking? And some kids don't know what that's like. It's just a strange situation to leave people in.
That's what home is.
That's what home is.
Home and hearth, isn't it? Is
exactly.
That what you say?
Home and hearth, yes.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And I suppose, you know, if you sit and break bread, as they say. But it's very difficult. I think if you have a place to cook, that where you it's something intimate and something with your children you can do. You can be a mother. A mother is someone who, feeds her children.
Exactly. Yeah. I have heard of, I can't remember which center it is, but they had like a rota of certain groups would cook for each other, and apparently the men, the food that they were cooking was absolutely delicious.
I'm serious.
And so like it's the men, the women, the mothers, the fathers, everyone has something to bring, and it is really a great bonding moment to be able to share your food with the people you love.
And it yeah. sounds so normal and natural.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
It's what we do.
It's what we do.
From the time we get up in the morning.
Yeah.
We think about it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think so. Do you think that there are positive things happening now in the future?
In terms of direct provision.
Yes. And yes. About the policies, since you're the policy officer.
Policies.
Do
yeah.
you, what do you think about that?
Well, recently there were new standards for direct provision that came out, mm-hmm. And with that comes new oversight. I mean, I'm hoping that that policy is positive and that it is listened to, and it will improve standards in the centres. It's quite difficult because many of the centres are run by private contractors,
which
means there's less accountability there, I think. But there's some really amazing grassroots movements going on,
yes.
Who, you know, are raising their voices and making sure that, like, everyone is heard. Movement of Asylum Seekers in Ireland, they actually have a conference coming up this Saturday. Mm. And that's all exclusively asylum seekers who have lived in direct provision sharing their point of view.
Is this your conference?
It's not my conference, no, but...
Is that you have a conference coming in?
Yes, separately. At Kidwa, we have our own conference on the 22nd of October, and that's about female genital mutilation.
Yes.
Starting the community dialogue to protect women and girls, because there are women and girls living in Ireland who are at risk. Mm-hmm. And
really?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, there's women here who come from high prevalence countries, from Africa, from the Middle East, mm-hmm. From everywhere. And we see sometimes girls taken out of schools, brought home to be cut. We see women here who have been cut years and years ago and are still suffering the health effects of that. And so there is a specialist service in Dublin for women who've experienced FGM. But the point of the conference is really to get people talking about it again, to sort of re-raise the issue, because currently we do have criminal legislation and it's more of a community and social issue than it is criminal. I think that's the only way to solve it, is to...
We have a lot to talk about, our time is up.
Okay.
I mean, come another day and we'll talk about your conference.
Yes. Absolutely, 22nd yes. of October.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for talking to me, Lakshmi.
Thank you.
Thank you.